This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for coming by the show. Today, we're going to talk about an interesting topic. You know, you've heard about virtual worlds before, but have you ever heard about the kind of the federal virtual worlds? There's a number of federal virtual worlds going on. There's a whole conference that's covering this right now that's going to be happening next week, and we want to talk about it. We've got Dr. Paulette J. Robinson. Paulette, we got to tell what the J stands for when we get a chance. But she's the Associate Dean for Teaching and Learning and Technology at the iCollege at National Defense University. I'm just trying to make sure I say that correctly because we got the public affairs person sitting in here, and she will kill us if we don't say it the right way. So the iCollege at the National Defense University. Dr. Paulette Robinson, talk to us about what's going on with the virtual worlds and this conference that you have going on. Tell us about the conference, and then tell us about all the different, you know, unique, you got this challenge that you had. You got immersive technology, 3D. You got all kind of unique things going on. Talk to us.
So the Virtual Worlds Conference really came about in 2007, the very first time. Five people got together, and now it's over 3,000.
Oh, wow.
And it is a combination of federal, state and international. We have academia and industry, because all of us do this together. One person can't. So we've had, this is our fifth year, we're inspiring the future because it's finally getting to a point, the convergence is one of the themes of the conference. We now have social media, we have computers that are every day that can accommodate good graphic cards, you don't have to go out and get a special computer. The connections within our homes are so robust and that we can easily do a virtual world, so there isn't that problem. And they've got better in terms of how they handle things. So we now can get into a virtual because of that convergence. Then we have social media and smartphones and a variety of other applications. So now the virtual worlds fit into an ecosystem and they can support it in a meaningful way. So it's really an exciting conference. It's probably the best conference we've had because we're starting to finally get to a place where the enterprise can use this and it's robust enough for the enterprise.
You know, that was my fault. You know, I'm the host, and my phone should be off. But in the whole dynamic, as we're thinking about virtual worlds, I mean, and with this conference, you know, where are we going with the future of this? I mean, are we looking at a dynamic where all federal agencies at some point in time will have a virtual world? I mean, what are we looking at? I mean, because you're kind of at the edge of this right now. So, I mean, what's the future holding?
So I think the web will be 3D.
Okay.
Wouldn't you like to walk around the web with somebody and actually have a sense of being there?
But you know what? When you say web being 3D, are we talking about, you know, me being hooked up to kind of, are we talking about kind of the dynamic where I'm hooked up to a machine and I'm able to kind of walk around or feel?
No.
Or what are we talking about?
So have you ever played the Kinect?
Yeah.
So the Kinect, you move in front of it, and it takes your body movements. It's quite natural. You're not hooked up to any machinery, right?
Right.
So the input devices have now gotten to a place where I do natural movement. And so when you move, it is intuitive. Some of the virtual worlds still have using a keyboard or a gaming device, but they're going to move to these Kinects. So when I move in there, it's natural. I think one of the reasons virtual worlds have had a little bit of a hard time taking off, especially in the enterprise, is that we couldn't move naturally. Had to use sort of this artificial stilted kind of way. That's not happening now. They're experimenting with things in your eyes so that you can move around and it covers eye movement. We will have an eye movement vendor at the conference. Hmm. So there's going to be some interesting things that happen in terms of just being able to move in the virtual world naturally.
Okay.
So that's going to be an important improvement. I think the future
How soon, though? I mean, we got
to
connect.
It's right here.
Okay.
It's right here.
I mean, but how do you think it'll be to the masses soon? Or, I mean, is the connect already kind of the dynamic? And, I mean,
no, I think it's just, I think it's one.
Okay.
And I think we're going to see others that that occur. There is, Emotive came out about 2 years ago and it's gotten better. Okay. It looks like a bicycle helmet, only it's not as heavy or as thick.
Okay.
And you put it on your head, and when you put the sensors in your head, what it does is it says green light on your computer, and then you have 5 or 10 minutes, you train it to move around the virtual world. And 2 years ago, the Army brought it up. I put it on my head. It took me about 5 minutes to move left and right and around, went into Second Life, bumped into walls. but we had people.
It takes learning.
It takes getting used to it, like a bike. It changes your brain patterns.
Okay.
So we have a wonderful speaker that's going to do mind, brain, and virtual reality. He's done a book on it, and how all the studies are showing when you're in this world, you believe yourself to be there. Your brain believes yourself to be there. And so they've done amazing things with virtual worlds, with soldiers who have gotten burned, for example. They are in this world called Snow World that puts a visor on them, and it's fairly primitive, but they take brain scans of it, and the pain centers in their brains have changed. So it is a profound experience in there.
So the dynamic of you know, where you talk about and your expertise, kind of the teaching and the learning and how technology is helping and foster that, we're looking at a whole dynamic between the wounded warrior all the way to telework.
That's right.
I mean, that's what it seems like.
That's right.
I mean, and with all of that, you're seeing more interest in federal agencies. Will we eventually be able to have the kind of the virtual world where you basically can get up, put your maybe a thing on, and you can work in that virtual world environment?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So I think what's really kind of amazing is last year we had about 250, 300 at the conference, but we had over 3,000 online doing the stream and in virtual worlds. Okay. We saved the government about $2 million in registration fees and travel costs. So I think the economics is going to drive it from one perspective. So I think we're going to find ourselves needing to meet. So IBM uses these virtual worlds as much or more for their meetings. For global teams.
Okay.
They schedule through their physical space. And they have this map that's really cool. You put a pin in where the person that's holding the meeting is, and everybody else has a pin in the map where they are.
Okay.
And it automatically calculates for IBM how much travel costs are saved, and it accumulates for the organization. You can also do that for green. They weren't doing it at the time, but you can. You just need Cisco's algorithm for green.
You know, I want to kind of break down the conference and break down some of the elements of it with the challenge that you had. I mean, break that down for us, and what was that involved in?
So we're hosting the results of the Federal Virtual Worlds Challenge that was hosted and given by the Army Research Lab. That's who had the challenge. They've had it for the last 3 years. The purpose of it was to really get some innovative technology that DOD could use.
So
they wanted to foster it. So challenging the federal government has become a way to get innovation into the government, with an inexpensive and give everybody a chance. So all the winners of the challenge are going to be at the conference showing what they've done. And they'll be in poster sessions on the second day. We have a reception starting at 3:30, and we have a vendor fair with vendors, and we have a room with 25 government projects that are using virtual worlds.
Can we get a taste of what some of the winners were? I mean, like in terms of, or do we have to wait to the conference? I mean,
have to wait to the conference. They're actually posted. They're posted on the Game Tech site.
Okay.
So it'll be really good.
What's the site? So if somebody wants to see this, either they can see it now, they have to wait till next week and they can see it, or
they can go and see it on the Game Tech site, or put in a search Federal Virtual World Challenge.
Okay.
And they've got a whole site on who has won and what they've done.
Okay.
The best thing to do is just to go in and see what the tools they are. But they were focused on teaching and learning and how those things. And one of the persons that is at our conference that's real interesting is Kevin Holloway. Dr. Kevin Holloway is an Army psychologist that has created a whole educational experience in Second Life for PTSD.
Okay.
And it's profound. And then he's now gotten permission to pilot treatment in a virtual world.
So what has he found? I mean, has he found that the PTSD, in terms of working with these wounded warrior soldiers and people who are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and other areas, has he found that this is, you know, there's some tremendous advancements in terms of working with people and helping them kind of get past this?
So the pilot for the actual sessions has just started this year.
Okay.
So the educational experience is for family vets and military.
Okay.
And you play games. It's an awareness place, but that is really interesting. It takes them through an event and helps them reflect on it. And they've now connected using QR codes, a way to download mobile apps for like meditation, ways to feel calmer. So they're using the advantage of the convergence. So he's bringing with him cards that we're going to distribute so people can download the apps and see what they're doing. They're free.
Okay.
And it's really helping. In many cases, soldiers can't get to a VA center if they're vets.
That's true. Yeah.
And so it's 4 or 5 hour drive, right, 2 or 3 times a week. It's just becoming impossible. So what they're hoping to do with Virtual Worlds is prove that it's safe and secure, because it's a very private conversation.
Right. Right.
But the Virtual Worlds give you a little space, too, a little safety to have that discussion. So they're going to be there. Dick Dillon, who's going to be at the conference, has done a whole bunch of drug rehabilitation. He's got an NIH grant. So he's going to be showing what is possible in Virtual Worlds for drug people, rehabilitation to work.
Have you found, and we got to take a quick break, I want you to answer this when we come back. Have you found that people sometimes are more open in the virtual world in terms of, I mean, even with the PTSD or even with learning, do you find that people are more open or more willing to take risk in the virtual world or more willing to learn new things in the virtual world than they would be kind of in a real world sense? I mean, I want to kind of maybe go into that question a little bit, because I know sometimes that was a big conversation about people and their lives online, and then sometimes they, you know, go into a new identity and they'll allow certain things to come out that they probably wouldn't have allowed to come out just maybe face to face with somebody. We'll talk about this and much more as we talk about the virtual worlds and virtual reality and virtual dynamics that the federal government is using. There's a federal virtual world conference that's going on at National Defense University. Their iCollege is hosting it next week. And we have Dr. Paulette J. Robinson. We'll find out what the J stands for at the end of the show. She is the Associate Dean for Teaching and Learning and Technology at the National Defense University iCollege. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Central Michigan University has 7 centers right here in Metro D.C. Surprised? CMU has been educating Metro D.C. professionals since 1975, offering accredited adult-friendly degree programs designed for working professionals.
I have been to every center in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. The professors are exceptional. The advisors are great. I just really enjoy the environment of CMU.
Stop by our open house at CMU's Alexandria Center on Wednesday, May 16th between 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. We'll have staff, program directors, and faculty on hand to answer all of your questions about our quality degrees and student services. Plus, you can talk with financial aid advisors, career services counselors, and drop in for continuous presentations on how to take an online class. Apply at the open house and we'll waive the $50 application fee. Certain restrictions apply. Go to cmich.edu/metrodc or call 877-679-1268 to let us know you're coming to CMU's Alexandria Center Open House. Certified to operate by CHEV.
Are you a civilian employee of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State? You may be eligible for term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America. Term life insurance helps provide security for your family in case something happens to you. It's money to pay your mortgage or your children's college expenses, or help ensure your spouse can retire in comfort. GEBA's group life plan offers affordable rates with coverage amounts up to $600,000. Civilian employees of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State. Don't let these exclusive benefits pass you by. Start planning today and get peace of mind for your family and protection for their future. Visit GEBA.com/termlife to learn more or to download an enrollment form. That's GEBA.com/termlife. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7742. 2.
Hey, Jamie, who sings that song? Whoa, piece of bread.
That can't possibly be a real song.
No, it is. We heard it on the car radio this morning.
Matt, we really need to get HD radio so you can hear song lyrics better. Actually, we should get a Kia Sorento with the UVO infotainment system and HD radio. This way you can hear all your corny lyrics with crystal clear digital sound quality, and I can listen to good music on all the extra FM HD 2 and HD 3 stations it offers. Now sing that song again to me.
Whoa.
Voice-activated UVO infotainment system with HD radio. Now available in the Kia Sorento.
Join the United States Geospatial Intelligence Foundation for GeoInt Community Week, June 4th through 8th, featuring classified and unclassified workshops, demonstrations, exhibits, briefings, and networking opportunities. USGIF's GeoInt Community Week is a great opportunity to learn more about the GeoInt issues affecting the defense, intelligence, and homeland security communities. Register and learn more at usgif.org, the United States Geospatial Intelligence Foundation, where our national security begins.
Join the Association for Federal Information Resources Management Awards Luncheon and celebrate as they applaud achievement in the federal IT community. The annual Affirm Leadership Awards recognize individuals and groups who are leading innovation in government. The awards will be given out on Thursday, June 14, 2012, at the Affirm Leadership Awards Luncheon at the Capitol Hilton, 1016th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. Register today at affirm.org.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we are in the virtual world right now. Oh, I wish we were in the virtual world, but we are discussing virtual worlds. There is a Federal Virtual World Conference 2012 going on May 16th through the 18th. It's going to be going on at the National Defense University at their iCollege. And the primary person who put this together is in the studio right now, in the studio, actually in reality, not in the virtual world, but one day, is Dr. Paulette J. Robinson. She is an associate dean for teaching, learning, and technology at the iCollege at National Defense University. And we're talking about what's going on with this conference. And we're also talking about how federal agencies are starting to use virtual worlds. I mean, not only to teach, but also, I mean, exciting things going on with PTSD, exciting things that's going on in terms of meetings and everything else. It can save the government money, but it can also provide some solutions. Dr. Robinson, talk to us about, and I asked a question about, do we see people, you know, getting a lot more engaged with the virtual world or doing things they probably would not have done in a virtual world than they would have reality?
So it's real, that's a real interesting question. I think the research is showing that people get more involved and more immersed in the learning. So if I sit there and someone's talking at me in a lecture, I'm just being receptive. And so the most common way that we're using technology for meetings that are remote is a webinar. Now, I have to ask you a question, Derek.
Okay.
When you are on a webinar, are you doing other things?
I may be looking at a TV. I may have a number of things going on.
That's right.
Multitasking.
That's
yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happens is it's because it's just a delivery mechanism, there's a sense of disconnection or disinvolvement. Even though you can chat in the environment, most people are busy typing, doing other stuff. I know I am.
Right.
And I go in a room and everybody raises their hand.
Right.
But in a virtual world, you are there walking around. And I'll tell you what, if you leave your computer, your avatar slumps.
Okay.
They know you're asleep and not doing
okay,
your,
okay,
you're not
okay,
there.
Okay.
So what it does, though, is, first of all, one of the things they've learned with learning is if something is fun, you're the most open. If you're really scared about something or nervous or you're overwhelmed by the information, just shut down. You know that from your own experience.
Right.
In a virtual, because it's fun, people take the information in, and the designs are like gaming or interactions or simulations if you're doing an educational piece. Meetings then become ways of pulling down information very easily from your desktop, but you're interacting with the person because the studies have shown, and Dr. Blaskovich will show this even from his book, that when I move around in a virtual world, I believe myself to be there. And when that happens, the learning is visceral.
Okay.
And the interactions are more authentic.
Okay.
And immersion and authenticity is what makes our lives have meaning and connection, and we have connections.
Right. You know, with all of that, and I'm sure the technology is just getting to that point now where, you know, I always think about the holodeck, you know, on Star Trek, where a person could actually go into a zone
yep.
and you could do training or you can experience a certain, you know, reality. Do you think that one day we'll get to that point? I mean, are we headed there?
Well, if you read Ray Kurzweil's book on singularity, that's where he's predicting, and he's a futurist that is almost always right.
Okay.
I mean, he's kind of quirky, but he's almost always right about this.
Sure.
He believes that in our brains we'll either have an implant or devices that we can switch in and out of virtual worlds. So they'll be like in front of us, or we can manipulate the world. We're not going to want to do virtual worlds on a little handheld, right? I mean, you can't see the little people.
Right.
But when our handhelds become projected on any surface where we can interact by touch,
right,
we have our virtual world with us all the time.
Right.
And those mechanisms are going to get smaller and easier to use. So we're headed in that direction.
Right. Okay.
So I think we'll be moving in between them very easily because we'll be connected to everybody whenever we choose.
You know, it kind of brings me into the conference. I'm looking at the schedule of the different, the keynotes you have on there, the mind, brain, and virtual reality we were just talking about, the future of health applications. Is that the one with the PTSD?
Is
that what we're talking about?
Yep.
You know, as we look at, I mean, when you look at this whole agenda, which is packed full of different great things, military open simulator and everything else, what are some of your favorite? I mean, I know you don't want to necessarily just pick out somebody, but is there anything that just grabs you as maybe one of the favorites that you're looking forward to?
Well, I think actually I'm looking forward to the whole program just because I put it together and
right,
I don't put things I don't really am not interested
right,
in.
Right.
I would say for people that they're going to see some things that are new, in other words, say, well, this is where we are, where can we be inspired for the future?
Right,
where is it going?
And that's your thing.
That's exactly my thing.
Sure.
So I think in the past we've sort of felt constrained by the present. But where are we going? And one of the things that I think the government and military has constrained having virtual worlds is cybersecurity.
Okay.
Worlds like Second Life have to have hundreds of ports open, which no CIO is going to allow you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's in an open environment. It's great to work with the public, but it's within the firewall in cybersecurity environment, it's really tough. So we have a whole panel addressing security for the first time.
Okay.
And really some heavy hitters. So I'm really excited about the program that's coming for cybersecurity. The keynote speaker.
You know, let me even hit that because, I mean, I'm looking at this right now, and the question that really caught me, it says security in virtual worlds. Can I trust on your avatar? Can you even trust? I mean, you know, that kind of digs into if you have maybe somebody who penetrated your security and then as a fake avatar and that person maybe trying to get information from you or however it works. I mean, is that the concern?
So that's one of the concerns. Obviously, we don't even know when we have an email or a chat who's there.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
so this
sure.
is like even deeper. So how can we know that's the person? But even deeper than that, when we do have interoperability, I want the same avatar because I have designer clothes and floaty
right,
hair and
right,
heels.
Exactly.
So I want to, you know, have
right.
the look.
Yeah.
I want to have that person who I've identified with to be at work, at play, anywhere I want to go because it'll be a 3D web.
Right.
So there'll be parts of me, just like when you go out in public, you don't give somebody your social security number, right?
Yeah.
But if I'm in the workplace and have to verify who I am, I may, or I might have a CAC card. So I think what we're not addressing is there will be levels of identity exposure depending on your environment. And we have to start thinking about the avatar in terms of when I meet you on the street, you see my name, a couple of things about me, and I can choose to, just like I can choose to put on clothes in a virtual world, I can choose to expose different parts
certain
of my data.
Levels of information, yeah.
So General Lessel from the Air Force, he's retired now, 4 or 5 years ago came out with the most amazing paper about everybody getting an avatar in the Air Force, whether you're a civilian or military. And one of the things he was going to do is you plug into personnel systems, all types of things, so you have a flow of information back and forth that's relevant about the individual. So if you use it for training and education, I finished that training because the analytics behind show that. So we're going to see it become part of our whole world. I may have credit cards that I choose to expose in a particular store that's online that I have given permission for them to see or use a mechanism.
Okay.
So we're going to have different levels of information we choose to expose depending on where we are. So it's going to have that geolocation element. So Intel, in their approach to security, has decided there's several things that they're trying to do just with their network. So a master identity list will clear who you are.
Okay.
Where you are located depends on what you get to see on the network.
Okay.
And so, and then the third thing is the data is encoded on who gets to access it. So think about this with an avatar. I will be able to, where I'm located on the internet, decide what you can see. It depends who you are and your identity and my identity. So it's going to be a real interesting verification process because some people show up as a dragon, right?
Right, yeah.
Sure. So I'm going out to find out what animal I want to be. I haven't quite figured out. I mean, I'm going shopping
for...
We've
got to find the most beautiful animal out there. Right?
One of my friends had this most amazing dragon. So one of our instructors walks around with wings on his back in Second Life when he has a class so they can follow him and know where he is after they build their avatar.
Right. You know, with that, I want to go into a lot more of what's going on with the conference because I even want to talk about the open simulator in the military. I want to talk about, you know, the other dynamics. And you're going to be doing the closing speech. And I know you probably haven't put it all together yet, but I mean, I do want to kind of talk about maybe some of the key things that you are going to touch on and even the virtual characters. I mean, you mentioned about making, you know, the dragon or making who you are. And, you know, even want to talk about that in terms of do people are they making these characters to identify with a certain thing? I mean, how do people start thinking about the avatar process of choosing who they're going to be in these virtual worlds? And where are we going with this? We're talking about the virtual worlds and the federal virtual worlds. There's a great conference that's going on, and we'll talk about the conference and how you can register. Is registration still open?
It's still open.
Okay.
Welcome. We stream it via web as well, so it'll be available for people to observe.
So Dr. Robinson is going to talk to us about how do you register for the workshops and register for the whole conference. We're talking about the Federal Virtual Worlds Conference of 2012. It's going on May 16th through the 18th. At National Defense University at their iCollege, and I have in studio with me Dr. Paulette J. Robinson. She is the Associate Dean for Teaching, Learning, and Technology at National Defense University's iCollege. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal civilian and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and/or complex and/or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
Everything is possible at Lockheed Martin, especially for veterans and those transitioning from the nation's military. Come explore a career with a leading provider of systems, products, and services to the U.S. government. We are conducting job events for the rest of the month in Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Stop in to explore careers here and overseas for cleared professionals with skills in engineering, information technology, intelligence analysis, and other areas. For event details or to chat with a recruiter, visit LockheedMartinJobs.com/WTOP, then click on events. You will join us as we recognize 100 years of accelerating tomorrow, a century of helping meet our clients' most defining challenges. Lockheed Martin, everything is possible. For the careers of veterans and transitioning service members, go to LockheedMartinJobs.com/WTOP and click on events. We are an equal opportunity employer.
Disabled American Veterans is dedicated to one single purpose: building better lives for America's disabled veterans. May 18th through the 20th, in the company of the vintage B-25 Mitchell Bomber, DAV brings its message of support for veterans to the Joint Base Andrews Air Show. In its modern-day mission with DAV, the B-25 serves as a reminder of the sacrifices veterans make for freedom. Meet the DAV flight team with the B-25 at the Joint Base Andrews Air Show.
Rock that fanny pack, wearing those khakis last.
Kevin,
yeah?
What are you doing?
Just singing this sweet tune I heard on the radio this morning.
We need to get you HD radio, man. Those are not the lyrics. If you were listening to that song in my Kia Optima with the UVO infotainment system and HD radio, you'd hear all the lyrics with crystal clear digital sound quality. Plus the artist and song title even display on my UVO screen.
Then let's go for a ride and hope the fanny pack song comes on.
Voice-activated UVO infotainment system with HD radio. Now available in the Kia Optima.
What is the strategic vision for today's U.S. Air Force? How is the Air Force managing in an era of fiscal constraint? What is the Air Force doing to improve its operations and become more efficient and agile? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with his very special guest, Aaron Connaughton, Undersecretary of the U.S. Air Force, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
After a nationwide competition, a dozen student teams were recently selected to showcase innovative engineering projects by the National Collegiate Inventors and Innovators Alliance. A Baltimore team hopes to improve punch biopsies, the most common technique for getting skin samples that includes all layers. The procedure involves several tools, a circular blade, a punch tool, forceps, scissors, and Nishant Kumar, a junior at Johns Hopkins University, says,
depending on the expertise of the dermatologist, you could sometimes damage the integrity of the skin sample.
Kumar's team engineered a simple all-in-one punch device. Once inserted into the target skin sample, its innovation is a wire mechanism that acts like a cheese cutter.
It just cuts the skin at the bottom, so it separates the skin from the tissue underneath
and pulls out a cleanly cut sample. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal News Radio. This is Derek T. Dorch on Fed Access. We are talking about the virtual worlds. Is it the Federal Consortium of Virtual Worlds?
For Virtual Worlds.
Okay, the Federal Consortium for Virtual Worlds. There is a conference going on May 16th through 18th, and we are talking about this conference right now. I have in studio with me, not in the virtual world, but we're going to find out how this works next week. But Dr. Paulette J. Robinson, she is Associate Dean for Teaching, Learning, and Technology at the National Defense University's iCollege. And we'll talk about maybe about the iCollege a little bit more if we get some time before we close out. But going back to this conference, Dr. Robinson, let's talk about how you register. And then, you know, I found something interesting. If you register on the virtual world side, then, you know, there's no cost. But if you come, and maybe this is even something that's like, as we look at people coming to seminars and everything in the future, you may have more nominal costs if you're in the virtual world. And so your company or the federal government can save money, like you said. Let's talk about all these kind of dynamics. One, where can they find the information about how to register? And then two, what is the cost saving across the full government, you know, as we look into the virtual worlds?
Well, you can find it on our website, and I'm sure you can post the sure. website web address on your site.
Sure.
You just click on register now. If you are coming, it's like $75 per day.
Okay.
So it's a way for us to keep people in the building and okay. be able to just the nominal expenses we have. So $75 for a day of workshops or $150 for a whole day, 2 days of speakers is nominal.
Great. That's really great.
So it's free. I give it away free, but we just have some expenses, and obviously the federal government doesn't make any money.
Sure.
So we really, the virtual part of it had over 3,000 last year. We do a stream, and we have 5 virtual worlds that can go into. Try it on. Come on down.
Right.
See what Second Life's like.
Right.
We'll have instructions on the website about where the stream is. If you can only get a browser at your workplace but want to see these people, you can just click on the stream. We're taking questions from Twitter. We're expecting between 3,000 and 5,000 on the stream and virtual worlds this year.
Wow.
At some point during the 3 days. Last year, we had over 3,000 saved, government over $2 million. So.
You know, when you kind of analyze who is attending, I know this is National Defense University, and is there a reason why we're having more DOD? Because, I mean, of course, you guys are taking the lead on this, but, I mean, are you also seeing other government agencies? I mean, we talked about a couple here and there, but are you really starting to see other government agencies who are starting to really get interested in this? Or is this just really, I mean, DOD has seen that we can really use this in a certain way with our soldiers? I mean, what are you seeing?
It's across government.
Okay.
So, for example, we had the Department of Transportation use 3D Explorer, which is a virtual world that the federal consortium hosts on our website. And they had a their conference for bridge kind of bridge equipment that's very large in Las Vegas. Well, most people couldn't go to the convention. So they actually brought the vendors into 3D Explorer for all the people around the country that needed to talk. And she's going to be at the conference at the poster session.
Okay.
DHS is using it quite a bit, especially for training, but also for emergency responders. So you'll see that as a poster session and also as a workshop. So it's across government. Interproject NTER is done by the Department of Energy, and they've created a learning management system that has hooks into virtual worlds that you can use and do the analytics for. And it's open source, open standards, and they let anyone in the federal government use it. And Michelle Fox is going to be doing on the second day a presentation that's going to be phenomenal, because we have all of the community colleges in Illinois, for example, are in this space. So it's a way to really be able to share information and hook into any kind of personnel system that they want. So it's coming across government. That's why we have 25 poster sessions. I'm so excited. There's only about 5 to 8 that are just DOD, but the rest are all federal government, and it's wonderful.
You know, I've noticed even that some agencies are starting to use virtual worlds for job fairs.
That's right.
I've seen FBI do it. I've seen the intelligence community do it. You know, and now in a dynamic where, of course, people are so hungry for government jobs, I'm seeing that federal agencies are seeing it to be cost effective.
That's right.
To use this. And I guess so people can come in with their avatars. This kind of leads me into the future of virtual characters. You know, I mean, as people are maybe even doing job searching or doing professional work in a virtual world, what's this keynote going to talk about? I mean, as we look at your virtual character.
So virtual characters are really about, that's Jesse Schell.
Okay.
And Jesse Schell is really a gamer. Okay. I mean, but he thinks of gaming outside the box. So he's famous across the world. I did an interview for the BBC, and they were going, Jesse Schell's going to be there. And I go, yeah,
like a
he's
rock star,
one
huh?
of them,
yeah,
but he's a rock star.
Okay.
Because he thinks, he did a TED, he thinks outside of the box in terms of gaming. And he's going to start talking about how that characters and how that movement it really works in a virtual world, because gaming is in a virtual world.
Sure.
So how do we think about it differently? So he's a really innovative thinker that comes out of Carnegie Mellon, their media center. So he's an amazing guy.
Are we looking at the dynamic? I mean, you mentioned a gamer, and the gaming world is very, one is very profitable, but is very much so taking over in terms of a virtual reality where people can really get into a game, whether it be Call of Duty or wherever, and then really start working around. Are we starting to see a convergence between maybe those education, like your environment, and then the gamers are starting to kind of come together and talk about how do we work together to maybe create this environment? Are we seeing that?
Oh, absolutely. So immersion is the way we really learn. So think about how you learn to ride a bike. Mm-hmm. You're actually immersed in learning how to ride the bike.
Mm-hmm.
It became an application. It was something you do. It's something that was very physical. Most of the time when we learn things through our body, it's the most profound because we're using the most of our brain. And it's fun. And so we're more relaxed. It's more fun, and you'll see that the learning is deeper, and that's what all the research is showing. When these things are designed not where they sit in chairs and a faculty member avatar talks to them, but when they are immersed in building, constructing, exploring, you'll find that the learning is so much deeper. So that's what's happening, a lot of simulation. So, for example, there's an I-95 corridor virtual world that has to do with the state of Delaware, New York, Virginia, Maryland, I think North Carolina and South Carolina and Florida, all along the I-95 corridor. And when there's an emergency response, there's police, fire, ambulance, who's in charge? How do we operate together? So there's a big simulation in virtual worlds that they go into to practice. What is it like to do this?
Sure. Are you seeing, and with this practice, you know, because now this could be a cost saver. I mean, where rather than having to shut down I-95, to kind of practice, if we can practice in the virtual world. But are we seeing that the reality that people are experiencing? Are we seeing that the virtual worlds are now coming close? I mean, where honestly people can say, you know what, we practice it in the virtual world, so we really do know how this thing is going to work in the real world scenario.
Yes.
Are we okay?
So the Navy.
Does that make sense? What
yes,
I'm
the Navy did an interesting experiment.
Okay.
They took data from the scopes that they have, and so they had real people, experienced and novices in real settings. And one in virtual worlds that modeled it with data.
Okay.
And they did an extensive study where people's eyes were going. They were talking about what their impressions were, how they were understanding the data on the scopes, that kind of stuff. They found no significant difference. Mm. So you can even do command and control from a virtual world.
Okay.
So when there's a Katrina and there are people coming from all over the world, you can have a command center that they can easily come in to see real live video footage and all types of things where they're sitting there making decisions.
Mm.
Not only can you practice it, you can actually do it because they're coming in from all over. You can't fly them into one place for the whole time,
right.
But you can use it as an information command and control center. So that's very possible in a virtual world, and not only just for practice for continuity of operations or disasters, but to actually use this command and control. You can bring actual data feeds into these worlds. That's what's sort of the amazing part for productivity and the experience.
You know, I want to get into this in the next segment because we have to take a quick break. But you just kind of led me to the next segment because you have a panel that's going to be discussing developing and deploying learning in virtual worlds. I mean, and I think that maybe agencies or other people listening to this who may be thinking, wow, I could use this application are probably going to want to know, okay, I know I can use it. Now, how do I develop it and deploy it? And you have a lot of experience in doing it at NDU. Let's talk about that on the next segment in terms of maybe for other people who want to learn this stuff and learn how to get it in their agency, what can they do? We're talking about the Federal Consortium of Virtual Worlds, the Federal Virtual Worlds Conference that's going to be going on. That is going to be going on May 16th through May 18th. It's going to be at National Defense University at the iCollege. Registration is still open. I just did a Google search on Federal Virtual Worlds. It came up on Google, so you can find it that way. We'll try to get some other links up, but you can go to National Defense University's website and find it there. Registration is still open. It's a small cost if you go in person, but if you're going to go on the virtual side, it's free. So you can take a look at it that way. We're talking to Dr. Paulette J. Robinson. She is an associate dean for teaching, learning, and technology at the National Defense University's iCollege. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Thomas Seneca, partner with TM Wealth Management and head of alternative strategies. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax serving the entire D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by LearningTree International.
LearningTree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality, instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by LearningTree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources at myvillagegreen.com. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane.
Here's Dr. Robert Norris, Chief Architect, NGA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Virtualization, sponsored by DLT Quest.
Data can't go into the clouds unless it's correctly tagged. And NGA, as part of its new vision, has actually had a geospatial data architecture management initiative going on. And one of the things that we're doing is making sure that not only is the data correctly tagged, but we're coming up with new ways of tagging the information.
Listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group. Log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Quest Software IT Management Solutions help you lower costs, manage risk, extend platform capability and lifecycle, and reduce the complexity of IT management. They make your mission possible, physical, virtual, and in the cloud. Quest Software is simplicity at work, and it's available through DLT Solutions. Simplify. Thrive. Quest Software. Learn more at dlt.com/mission possible. That's dlt.com/mission possible.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The American Veterans Center invites you to the 2012 National Memorial Day Parade, presented by Boeing, Monday, May 28th at 2 p.m. along Constitution Avenue. Join veterans groups, musical performers, hundreds of active duty troops, and celebrity veterans and supporters of the military, including Gary Sinise, Miss America 2012, and Grand Marshal and Air Force legend General Chuck Yeager. The parade is presented by Boeing, with additional support from the Association of American Railroads and many other generous sponsors. To learn more about how you can see the parade, visit nationalmemorialdayparade.com.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we are talking about virtual worlds. If you've ever seen Star Trek and saw the holodeck, you will understand virtual worlds. But we're headed in that direction, and we have a federal consortium of virtual worlds. There's a conference going on at Fort Leslie McNair. It's going to be happening on May 16th through 18th. Is going to be going on at the National Defense University at their iCollege. And I have with me in studio Dr. Paulette J. Robinson. What's the J stand for, Dr. Robinson?
It stands for Jean.
Right. I don't tell many.
We got the whole world knows.
Big secret.
The whole world knows that. But she's the Associate Dean for Teaching and Learning and Technology at the National Defense University iCollege. And she is the one who's put together this Virtual Worlds Conference that we've got going on. We've got a couple of different things that we've got to discuss on here. One, if a federal agency hears this and they want to deploy and develop this technology, how would they go about doing it?
Well, there's a couple of ways, and this is expanding in possibility. Okay. So we've been struggling for the last 3-4 years on cybersecurity. But what's happening with these virtual worlds is they're developing the virtual world to be browser oriented, which means that they go over regular web ports and you don't have to have any kind of client on your desktop. So for productivity's sake, you're able to just have meetings and do a variety of things without having those two things that were barriers to federal adoption. There are people that are associated, OPM is a big content contracts that have people that are associated with those contracts that can do development if you need it. But you can do very simple things in these worlds. They're like theater. So you can build a stage, you can tear it down, and it's very simple to build in. Hmm. So, and at the college, we use it for our classes. We do debates. It was real interesting to have all of our students in for a debate, and we created what's called machinimas, little videos of the debate. So we have those up on our website. We do classes in emerging technologies that the students go and create an avatar, and after it's over, don't tell anybody, but we have a bar underneath the river, and they go down and talk. Sure. We have dancing balls where they touch the ball and they just do a little dancing. Okay. But it's what it is it's fun.
Okay.
They connect with each other. And for our distance learning students, and we're all trying to go distance, right? All of our classes are often distance as well as residence. Okay. This enriches our DL courses so that the students feel present with one another other than just the discussion space you're typing, just like the webinars. They really feel then part of the class. So we have four islands. We have a variety of things that are on there. We have a big conference center. So one of the virtual worlds that people can go to in Second Life is the iColleges Four Islands, because we have a big auditorium there. We can accommodate 250 people. Yeah. So come on by, come on down, enjoy the conference. And one of the things that people would tell me that they liked even better in a virtual world than the real conference is they can talk to one another without interrupting the speaker.
Mm.
So it was that sense of being able to have community and discussion while someone's speaking.
And maybe talk about a point that's being made the speaker.
That's right.
You know, going into the speaker, you've got one of your opening speakers that's going to be talking about some key things. Talk about that.
So Randy Hinrichs runs a certificate program at the University of Washington in virtual worlds. And his students build within...
Is this the first certificate program in virtual worlds?
As far as I know, yes. Sure. He does an amazing job. It's a graduate level course. And the students come there because they want to. And they learn how to build spaces. They've done an incredible job. This year they're building what would a museum space look like in Second Life? Mm. It's absolutely incredible what they're doing. And I only saw it when they had only had 2 weeks of building experience and scripting. It was just phenomenal what they were doing. They actually had the CNN studio with cameras that you could actually take machinimas that were like the big cameras.
Sure.
They'd modeled it all. They had the live stream from CNN.
Oh, really?
It was just absolutely, you know, like the ball and everything.
Yeah.
It was absolutely. And they had only been building for 2 weeks.
Really?
So it's an amazing thing what his program does. And Randy has been involved in this whole, he worked for Microsoft and helped them with, was working with intranet and intranet. He's worked through a whole series of what IT can do in education. And he lives in virtual worlds for his job and his company. And he every day is in his office and interacting with people.
Mm.
And they have 40 islands.
Right.
And they are doing, the T2 island for PTSD was built by 2B3D.
Okay.
So he helped me build, he has incredible relationships across it. And so he's helped me build these particular environments and has shown me some really unique ways to teach. So we've built a classroom of the future at the iCollege, and that's allowing us to create a teaching and instructional environment or ecosystem that only takes advantage of students there, but we can bring in people from virtual worlds, we can bring in people through telepresence, we can bring them in a whole variety of ways, and then the classroom takes on a whole unique way of interaction, and that's what we're going to be experimenting with in that room.
Wow. We got to cut it off here, but what I want to do, I'm going to come to the conference, and I want to, after the conference is over, I want to have you back so we can recap, because I mean, I get a chance to see everything, and then we can talk about, you know, where virtual worlds are going, because I'm going to get into the virtual world too and see what's going on at this consortium. But let's talk about the consortium real quick. It's the Federal Consortium of Virtual Worlds. It's the conference. If you type it in Google and type in Federal Virtual Worlds, you can find it there. Or you can go to ndu.edu/iCollege, and then you'll find it from there as well. You can find a couple of different things, but it's going to be a great conference that's going on May 16th through 18th at Fort Leslie McNair in Washington, D.C. If you get a chance to come on out, you'll learn a lot about what the federal government, not just DOD, but all the federal agencies are doing about virtual worlds. So we hope to see you there. And we're going to have you back on, Dr. Robinson, and then talk about this after this conference is over.
Cool.
Thank you for coming back.
Thank you so much. It's been a joy.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED. Your source for federal news now.